Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. And by the way, that music you're hearing was a bit of Camille Saint-Saëns' Piano Concerto No. 4, and one of the possible pieces those young pianists have to pick out to play with the CSO at that finals concert for the 2014 World Piano Competition. But on to opera. The Cincinnati Opera kicked off their 2014 season last weekend with Georges Bizet's popular opera Carmen. You'll have a chance to see that production of Carmen again tonight and Sunday afternoon in Music Hall. It's just one of four productions hitting the stage this summer. And the Harry T. Wilkes Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Opera, Evans Maragis, is here in the studio to provide you with a preview. Welcome back to Cincinnati Edition, Evans.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Mark.
I imagine this, I know with Carmen underway, that's one thing, but you were mentioning rehearsals for Silent Night, which is kind of the centerpiece, I would say, of this season. When we talked last, we were talking about all that celebration of remembering World War I that all began with you scheduling this thing, and it's continues to take off, that World War I project.
It has snowballed across the region. I was just reading online this morning that one of the great old streets in Mainstrasse in Covington, which used to be named Bremen Street, but when World War I came along, it was changed arbitrarily to General Pershing Street, which it still is today.
Mm-hmm.
But I just saw a photograph this morning that they have restored the Bremen sign underneath, formerly known as Bremen Street.
Really?
Another beautiful thing that just happened to me today, my assistant from Atlanta is with me today, and so I'm playing tour guide a little bit. And we walked to the old Germania Insurance Building on the corner of 12th and Walnut.
Oh, beautiful building.
It's a beautiful landmark in downtown Cincinnati. Years ago, when I was first talking about Silent Night, a German resident of Cincinnati took me by the building, and he said, look to the top of the building. He said, you see those four what looked like tin boxes that are on the top of the building? They cover up the original German script of the building's name because they were plastered there in April 1917 as part of the anti-German hysteria. Well, lo and behold, today, two of the four have already been removed.
Wow.
So there's a tremendous impact that scheduling an opera about a momentous event in our history, which also happens to be very beautiful, the piece itself, dramatically very, very moving, but it's had a snowball effect on our awareness of Cincinnati's history as it relates to World War I.
Amazing, some of the activities that have been going on, the Cincinnati Museum Center, University of Cincinnati.
I'm very proud of it.
It's great, I have to say. Congratulations on quite an effort. And all these, the community partnering up, this is just an amazing effort.
Well, we have a unique one coming up this Saturday night, tomorrow night, and next weekend especially. Tomorrow night we have the second and final performance of something we call Songs of Love and War, which is a combination of great music from the Baroque era about love and war and separation and loss, and the wonderful poetry from World War I read by actors from Cincinnati Shakespeare. The Catacoustic Consort plays the music. Singers from our productions of La Callisto and Carmen sing the songs, and the actors recite the poetry. It's an amazing hour of memory of two great eras of creativity, the beginning of the 20th century and the middle of the 17th century, coming together. And then next weekend, on June 28th and 29th, an incredible celebration just a few days before the opera opens on July the 10th. June 28th is the exact 100th anniversary of the beginning of the war. On that date in 1914, Archduke Franz Ferdinand was assassinated in Sarajevo, thus setting in row the domino effect that would lead to hostilities at the end of July. We have a special moment of remembrance and reflection in Spring Grove Cemetery in the gorgeous Rose Garden. The Airmen of Note, the U.S. Army Air Force finest band, will be there. Singers from our Silent Night cast will be there. Seven members of the clergy from around the region and denominations will offer reflections on the men and women of their faiths who served in World War I. It's a great way, and it's free, by the way. Just come to Spring Grove Cemetery at 11 o'clock in the morning next Saturday, weather permitting.
Yes.
No, but if there's rain, by the way, we'll go into the Norman Chapel. But Sunday night, also in Washington Park on June 29th, the Airmen of Note play a free concert of music from both World Wars, the great Glenn Miller standards from World War II, and some of the amazing music from World War I. It's for me, it makes me so proud to be a Cincinnatian and to be affiliated with a set of arts institutions that collaborate.
It's Seeing that community collaboration is what's been so nice about this World War One project. But back to the Cincinnati Opera's 2014 summer season. Before we pick up and talk about the individual operas, I would like you to kind of give us a background, or we'd like to delve a little bit into the process of what it takes to put together a season. What process you go together? I mean, is this a dartboard with a bunch of names, Evans, or is this,
you know, we have an hour?
Yeah, well, okay, well, you know, no. In the nutshell, if you may, you know, how do you put together a season of opera here in Cincinnati?
You may remember that old saying that brides often use, something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue for a wedding. We do much the same thing. Every summer needs to contain an opera that is familiar enough to attract newcomers. Because all the surveys that opera companies do around the country, when they ask people what brought you to opera for the first time, they say a familiar title. Now, there are about 10 of those.
Yes.
And Carmen is one of them, and Aida is one of them, and La Boheme is one of them. You know the drill. So every season needs to have one of those because we're in the constant process of renewing our audience. And we want to attract younger people. We want to attract newcomers who may not have tried Cincinnati Opera before. So with a famous title, they have a point of reference. The other two main stage titles give us a little bit of leeway because we like to do something that is perhaps a little less familiar by a more famous composer. So not, let's say, Rigoletto by Verdi, but maybe Un ballo in maschera, let's say, which we did a few years ago. And then there's always room for something else that is a little bit dramatic that might be a little bit more familiar, but maybe not hasn't been performed in many, many years. So it's a process by which we try and achieve a balance across the four operas that offers perhaps a comedy and perhaps a tragedy, certainly a famous work. And now with the addition of the School for Creative and Performing Arts Auditorium, the wonderful Corbett Theater, we have a new string to our bow because we're able to offer an intimate opera every summer. This summer happens to be our first ever foray into the world, the incredibly varied world of Baroque opera. Mm-hmm. And we're starting with not a famous Handel opera. You would think we would have started with something like Julius Caesar by Handel.
No.
What we wanted to do is offer something that gives people an opportunity to experience the whole world of the beginnings of opera. And Cavalli's comedy, La Callisto, was the ticket for us. And it also allowed us to have another collaboration with a wonderful cataacoustic concert here in Cincinnati, headed by Annalisa Papano, and the wonderful musicians she draws from around the country and from the region, combining with members of the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, our pit band, as it were, since 1920. Kind of ritzy casting for a pit band, wouldn't you say? And because these are specialty instruments required for Baroque, it was another chance for us to bring two organizations together in the service of opera. But the blockbuster opera of the season is tonight and Sunday afternoon, with some reduced ticket prices to encourage students to come. Only two more performances of Carmen, tonight at 7:30 and the Sunday matinee. And I'm very proud of this production because the cast is operating both as an ensemble and great soloists. Stacey Rishoy, with each performance, grows and grows. This is her first Carmen. And she's like, what did I say the other day? What moves like a cheetah and sounds like one of the ancient sirens luring unsuspecting sailors to their doom? Stacey Rishoy singing Carmen.
And a local resident to boot. Stacey,
yes, she lives just across the river in Kentucky, as a matter of fact. We now go to the same jeweler, by the way, thanks to her tip.
Well, I wanted to ask, so as you're putting together, it's the music that comes first, not the singers? Because in the case of, I know when it comes to scheduling things in the classical music world and the opera world, that the people are booking 2-3 years in advance. So I know, you know, when you speak of the difficulties of putting together one season, well, you're really not looking at just one season. You are looking across the spectrum. So
3 and 4 seasons usually are in the planning process at any one time. I have to say that the first thing for us is a combination of title and production, as well as if it's an ensemble production, it's not as difficult to cast. So let's say a Mozart Marriage of Figaro, although it requires great voices, doesn't require any one particular standout voice. They all have to be great. But when you're doing Verdi's Trovatore, you have to have a heroic tenor, and you have to have a dramatic soprano, and you have to have an amazing mezzo-soprano as a Zucchena. So when we decide on Trovatore, we're simultaneously casting and deciding. When we decide on The Magic Flute, or I don't know why Mozart, because he's the ultimate ensemble composer, we don't have to cast as far in advance. So again, it's a little bit like a Rubik's Cube. You're moving all the parts all at the same time, and eventually it either comes together or you throw it on the floor and start all over again.
Well, that could cause some frustration, Evans. I don't know whether want to do that, but I can understand that. Evans Mirages is the Harry T. Wilkes Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Opera, guest on Cincinnati Edition today. Have you seen Carmen, the new production at Cincinnati Opera? Again, it performed last weekend and again this weekend. What did you think? And if you are an opera fan, what do you tell your friends to try to convince them to go to the opera as well? Give us a call at 513-419-7100. Now, I wanted to ask, I guess, you know, what kind of system do you have to try to keep track of what you're doing? If you're, you know, looking and balancing three or four seasons at a time, I mean, you know, what kind of, you know, magic Rubik's Cube of your own have you built, Evans?
We have good record keeping, of course. I mean, we do know what we've done since 1920. But my wonderful colleagues, Chris Milligan in particular, and our fantastic director of artistic operations, Marcus Kuschle, we sit together quite often and go over the operas we've done in the recent past. Also, apropos of your question beforehand, sometimes we are a little performer-driven. I'll never forget my first season working here, which was planned before my arrival, and Marcus had cast a very young, yet not so well-known soprano to sing two small roles in two different operas. Her name is Sarah Coburn. I walked into the theater to the first rehearsal, and I went, oh my gosh, this is a great voice. And she has consistently, as her career has grown, has consistently come back. And we cast and chose a couple of operas because we knew Sarah wanted to do them. So, but this goes back, way back into our history. One of the reasons we got some of the great singers of the 40s and the 50s and the 60s is because they wanted to try out roles that they would eventually do at the Met. Mm-hmm. And also because of the wonderful largesse and influence of particularly Mr. and Mrs. Corbett, Patricia and Ralph Corbett, who had great ties to City Opera, and Beverly Sills and Norman Traigle and that whole generation, people would come to Cincinnati because they like being here in the summertime. I know we have hot and humid weather, but we do have
unbelievable.
But we do have swimming pools, and we have a congenial atmosphere. And the great stars who have come here and who continue to come here come to Cincinnati in part because of something as old-fashioned as Midwestern hospitality.
Yes.
And they love coming here because they can go to a Reds game, they can go to the zoo, they can bring their kids, they can make a sort of a four-week of summer camp, as it were, with families. And so it gives us a drawing power that, let's say, is above our budget level. And it's one of the great, it's not a secret, but it's one of the great draws for Cincinnati Opera. And, of course, our audiences benefit. You get to see Bill Burton, who is one of the great tenors of our time, sing Don José here because he happens to like coming to Cincinnati.
That's great. Well, I wanted to ask about Carmen. Tonight at 7:30, Sunday at 3 in Music Hall. It's a new-to-Cincinnati production, and for those who aren't as familiar with opera, explain what that means.
It simply means that this set has not been seen on our stage before, but the work of its designer has. It is a monumental set, giving a sense of the oppressiveness of the military regime that ruled Seville in the beginning of the 19th century, when Carmen takes place. It was designed by the wonderful American designer Alan Charles Klein. Now, if you saw our Aida last summer, or saw it the first time we presented it in 2007, this incredible attention to detail and the monumentality of what Klein is able to do is simply extraordinary. And I will tell you, if you saw it under normal daylight, let's say what we call work light, you'd say, well, not all that impressive. It's just a couple of big archways and a wall and some stairs. Put Thomas Hasse's lighting on it, because Alan knows that a set comes alive with light, and it's extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. So our last Carmen was very pictorial, looked a little bit like a Goya painting. This Carmen is a little bit more abstract, although you know that you're in these physical spaces. And I think what it does is it gives a sense of the doom and the threatening nature of the world in which these people lived. But also, it's a great backdrop for the free-spirited Carmen, because she's, as it were, living her life as she sees fit. No rules apply to Carmen. She flaunts authority. She flaunts the strictures on her sexuality made by the oppressive society in which she lives. And she knows that she may pay the ultimate price for it, which, of course, in this opera, she does, but not without singing a lot of great music beforehand.
Indeed. It's Evans Mirages, the Harry T. Wilkes Artistic Director at the Cincinnati Opera on Cincinnati Edition, 513-419-7100. Becky from Clifton, you're on the air.
Hello. My name's Becky, and I was actually brought to the opera with a great modern opera called Treemonisha as a child.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was at the Cincinnati Opera, and I loved it. And I was just wondering, what emphasis do you put on modern operas like Treemonisha still?
Considerable. And you may know that Cincinnati Opera has, it's a more recent tradition, but it is a strong tradition beginning, I would say, more than 10 years ago when we presented Jake Heggie's Dead Man Walking to ecstatic reviews here in Cincinnati, the work of my great predecessor Nick Muni in helping us revive interest in works by composers of our time or composers who have only recently deceased. We continue that tradition. Last summer, we presented Galileo Galilei of Phil Glass, an opera from the 90s. We were co-commissioners for an opera called Margaret Garner, which, of course, has a very local connection, of Richard Danielpour in 2005. We did that production along with Detroit and Philadelphia. And we continue to commission new work. We have just announced that next summer, the newest opera by the hottest opera composer of today in America, Ricky Ian Gordon, has its world premiere at Cincinnati Opera. It's called Morning Star. And it continues our desire that opera that is of our time speak to issues of our time. That's one of the great things about Silent Night, which we're presenting this summer, written only in 2011. It tackles an issue that is still relevant, the horror of war. Morning Star, next summer, tackles another important issue in American society, the role of immigrants and the way that they built our country, and also the rise of the labor movement in the beginning of the 20th century. So to answer your question, we have a strong commitment. Nearly every summer, we present an opera that is either brand new or relatively new.
So Becky, I need to ask, you started out with a more modern opera, but do you enjoy the tried and true standards too?
Oh, surely. I look forward to seeing Carmen this weekend as well. So I will always come back after that first exquisite performance that I saw as a child that left me mesmerized.
Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you, Becky.
And thank you for the memories, Becky. Cincinnati Edition, you can make your comments at 513-419-7100. I do have a question here by email. At what age can you introduce a child to opera? I know there's the etiquette of the hall and the attention span of the child, too. But from your perspective, Evans, what do you think?
As soon as they stop squirming.
Okay.
We do have a wonderful opportunity, though. Every summer, there is an opera that I would say is a little bit more family-friendly. We've had families bring, for example, kids to just the first two acts of Aida. So once the big procession and the animals are gone, the kids get a little restive and they can go home. I would say once a child begins to be able to appreciate something that is a fine art of music or theater or even, you know, going to the movies and, as it were, sitting still, because opera does require a different kind of attention span than a video game. It's longer stretches of music. You're sometimes sitting in a darkened theater for upwards of 45 minutes. And so a young child needs to be able to be comfortable experiencing something that is of considerable duration. We have many young opera goers. We have, you know, kids who are around 10 probably is a great age because you're beyond those years where you're just trying to figure out yourself physically, can you sit for more than 10 minutes at a time? Please don't give them chocolate before or Coca-Cola before you bring them into the theater, whatever you do. But I think around 10 years old is a great way to start.
Well, we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to – we've talked about so many different things, but I did want to focus on the rest of the productions. The 2012 Pulitzer Prize winner, Silent Night, Kevin Putz music, coming up July 10th and 12th, and this is what was kind of the catalyst for the World War I remembrance.
That's right.
Tell us about Silent Night.
Silent Night tells a true story, and it tells it in a compelling way. It's a true story that has been fictionalized to make a great opera, but on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in 1914, the first Christmas of World War I, men across the Western Front spontaneously laid down their arms, against the orders of their superiors, crawled out of their trenches on both sides, celebrated Christmas, exchanged gifts, most importantly, buried the dead in no man's land, said mass, and realized that they had more in common than that which separated them. And for this precious 24 hours, peace broke out. The opera is based on a film from 2005 called Joyeux Noël, Merry Christmas, from France. And it tells, in a condensed way, the truce story with one fictionalized location, with men and women, a heroic woman, a soprano, actually, who comes to the front to be with her beloved, and how this truce took place and what were the consequences of it. Kevin has written only one opera. He has another one coming, but this was his first one. And I will never forget being in the theater by happenstance on opening night, the world premiere back in 2011, rushing out into the parking lot in the cold November night in Minnesota to call Patty Beggs in tears to say, Patty, we have to do this opera. This is some of the most compelling drama and some of the most beautiful music I've heard in an opera house in 40 years of opera going. So here it is. Only two performances, July 10th and 12th, and we're thrilled about it.
You mentioned the Corbett Theater at the School for the Creative and Performing Arts, and that will be a Cincinnati premiere of a Baroque opera.
Well, not a Cincinnati premiere, but
a Cincinnati
opera premiere.
Now, oh, okay.
This is what you learn after you live a while here in Cincinnati. There are people who have great memories. And actually, the opera that opened the Corbett Theater at CCM in the 1970s was also La Callisto.
Oh, really?
Now, it was in a different version than we are presenting. We're presenting something that really resembles the original. The version that was presented in the 70s was sort of a modernized by a musicologist conductor, which changed it a lot. This is the real article. But what it gives us an opportunity to do is to introduce to our audiences for the first time the beginnings of opera. But I guarantee you, if you come, all the things that you love about Verdi and Puccini and Rossini and Donizetti are already there in 1651 in some of the very first commercially produced opera. Arias, ensembles, this combination of comedy and a little bit of tragedy and a relatively speaking happy ending. Well, if you call being turned into a constellation and put into the sky and being called Ursa Major for the rest of eternity happy ending, that's what this one has.
And then the finale to the season, another gorgeous opera, and that is Madame Butterfly.
Well, here's an answer to your earlier question. We program Madame Butterfly primarily to have an opportunity to bring back Maria Luigia Borsi to sing the primary role of Cho-Cho-San.
The Italian soprano, correct?
The Italian soprano who's been with us twice. And once in a while, the opera gods are kind to us poor impresarios, and they give us a genuine Italian lyric soprano who can do justice to these great works of Puccini. Maria Borsi is it. She has a plangent, rich, many-hued voice. She is a tremendous actress, and I guarantee you she will break your heart as Madame Butterfly. She's the real deal, and she loves coming to Cincinnati. This is her third appearance here. We have plans for her already to come back in another great opera, which I'm not going to talk about today.
Not yet.
But I guarantee you will enjoy it. And that's only two performances, July 24th and 26th. So if you don't have your tickets for Butterfly yet and you want an amazing cathartic experience with some of the most beautiful opera music ever written, don't miss out.
Thank you for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Evans Miragis is the Harry T. Wilkes Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Opera. The opera's 2014 season continues with a repeat performances of Bizet's Carmen at Music Hall tonight at 7:30 and Sunday at 3. Then it's Silent Night, July 10th and 12th. Cavalli's La Callisto at SCPA's Corbett Theater, July 17th through 27th. A number of performances there. And Puccini's Madame Butterfly in Music Hall, July 24th and 26th. All the details and a link to Cincinnati Opera available at WVXU.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7. Technical director for today's show was Kevin Rowinski. Producer was Pete Breitmeyer, with help from Kevin Reynolds. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. You can find archives and links for Cincinnati Edition stories at our website, WVXU.org. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Science Friday next on 91.7, and happy summer!